On this particular day, 17 September, the relief was slow and difficult. As 3-5 moved in and the men of 1-5 moved out, the Japanese in the ridges on our left front poured on the artillery and mortar fire. I pitied those tired men in 1-5 as they tried to extricate themselves without casualties. Their battalion, as with the others in the 5th Marines, had had a rough time crossing the airfield through the heavy fire the previous day. But once they got across, they met heavy resistance from pillboxes on the eastern side. We had been more fortunate. After getting across the airfield, 3-5 moved into the swamp, which wasn't defended as heavily. With the relief of 1-5 finally completed, we tied in with the 1st Marines on our left and 2-5 on our right. Our battalion was to attack during the afternoon through the low ground along the eastern side of Bloody Nose, while 2-5 was to clean out the jungle between our right flank and the eastern shore. As soon as we moved forward, we came under heavy flanking fire from Bloody Nose Ridge on our left. Snafu delivered his latest communique on the tactical situation to me as we hugged the deck for protection. "They need to get some more damn troops up here," he growled. Our artillery was called in, but our mortars could fire only to the front of the company and not on the left flank area, because that was in the area of the 1st Marines. The Japanese observers on the ridge had a clear, unobstructed view of us. Their artillery shells whined and shrieked, accompanied by the deadly whispering of the mortar shells. Enemy fire grew more intense until we were pinned down. We were getting the first bitter taste of Bloody Nose Ridge, and we had increasing compassion for the 1st Marines on our left, who were battering squarely into it. The Japanese ceased firing when our movement stopped. Yet as surely as three men grouped together or anyone started moving, enemy mortars opened up on us. If a general movement occurred, their artillery joined in. The Japanese began to demonstrate the excellent fire discipline that was to characterize their use of all weapons on Peleliu. They fired only when they could expect to inflict maximum casualties, and stopped firing as soon as the opportunity passed. Thus, our observers and planes had difficulty finding their well-camouflaged positions in the ridges. When the enemy ceased firing artillery and mortars from caves, they shut protective steel doors and waited, while our artillery, naval guns, and 81-millimeter mortars blasted away at the rock. If we moved ahead under our protective fire support, the Japanese pinned us down and inflicted serious losses on us, because it was almost impossible to dig a protective foxhole in the rock. No individual events of the attack stuck in my mind, just the severe fire from our left, and the feeling that at any time the Japanese decided to do so, they could have blown us sky high.